The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
All right, little eye candy for you here. Hey, Bart Scott, take a look at this. All right, this is Rays outfielder Brett Phillips. He pitched the final two innings of a blowout loss yesterday. What do you think of the motion there?
Oh, man, he looked like Jingling, man, from life right there. He hit him with that slow sauce right there. You know what I'm saying? Pop up. Listen, he's effective.
He did. He makes the sliding play. They would lose 13-2. But, I mean, that's – look at him go. I mean, that's just an unusual-looking baseball player,
hey,
right there.
We call him Slash. He did it all.
All right, good fun to be had here as we begin another hour of Get Up. We are live, as always, above the Heineken River Deck at Pier 17. The squad is together today. Cam Jordan is in the house, and we got a lot to do. Let's hit it, because hour number two will begin in L.A. We're getting up with LeBron's Lakers as the King heads into a long offseason. Wait until you hear what he says he is not planning to do. Meanwhile, A.A.Ron needs help. Will his future be filled with frustration if they don't get it right now? We're going live to Green Bay in just a moment. And do not miss Cam and Company's favorite plays ever. Spoiler alert, they're all quarterback sacks. And they're on the way as we get up with you in this hour, starting right now. It is official. The Lakers have fired head coach Frank Vogel. They announced that yesterday after a season in which they went 33-49 and failed to qualify even for the play-in tournament. LeBron James yesterday addressing that decision and his team's path forward. Here's what he said.
I think the front office is going to do whatever it takes to help this ball club become a better ball club from top to bottom. They ask me my opinion, I'll give my opinion, but at the end of the day, they're going to make the decision that they feel is best for the franchise. I mean, it's not failure at all. I mean, listen, we came to work every single day, put our hard hats on, and we tried to get better every day, and the result just didn't happen for us. But it's not a failure. It's not like... we came together as a team. We wanted to be as great as we can be. We just didn't accomplish a lot of the things that we would have hoped.
Again, we talked about this earlier, Legler and Zach Lowe. I don't want to get into a deep discussion about parsing the meaning of the word failure, but I have to believe, Tim Legler, that if we were to look up its definition in the dictionary this moment, the Laker logo would probably be an apt one. If this wasn't a failure, I'm not sure whatever was.
A failure would be if the staff of the Titanic served bad seafood. A disaster is what happened, actually, okay? So if you're going to sit there and get into semantics, I mean, that's what we're really talking about. There's no other way to describe it. It's an epic disaster, honestly, because when you have LeBron James, you pair him with Anthony Davis, you go out and you add a Russell Westbrook, you're expecting to win a championship. It's that simple. If he's on your roster, you're expecting to win it all,
right?
And to be sitting home on the night the play-in starts, I don't know how else you could describe it other than a failure, disaster, or any other word you want to use.
We all agree with that. So let's do what LeBron says he's at least suggesting that he's only going to have a small role in doing, and that is shaping the future. Zach Lowe, let me come to you. How is this salvageable? Well, what has happened in LeBron's career in recent years is he goes places for 4 years. He goes to Miami for 4 years. He goes back to Cleveland for 4 years. He's now been in L.A. for 4 years. We do not think moving on from the Lakers is on the list of options here. So how is this salvageable for LeBron in Los Angeles starting today, Zach Lowe?
Yeah, the best thing about bad seasons, disaster seasons, failure seasons, bad seafood on the Titanic seasons is that they end. We can stop talking about last season now. All that matters is how the Lakers rebound from this. And you mentioned 4 years in LA, three of them injury issues, out of the first round just once. That's unheard of for LeBron James, and it shows you a whole bunch of things, including that, yeah, father time is finally catching up to him. The only thing that matters is how they pivot from here. That's going to be a new coaching hire. It's going to be exploring Russell Westbrook trades that better balance out the roster with shooters and 3-and-D players, you know, the kind of players they surrounded LeBron and Anthony Davis with when they won the championship, which feels like 10 years ago and was actually like 20 months ago or something like that, basically yesterday in real time. So that's the challenge going forward. We can leave this season in the rear view. And is LeBron going to have a say? Absolutely. He just told you, I'm going to give my opinion. They ain't going to ignore the opinion of arguably the best player of all time.
No, that's fair. And so then, Legs, what is it, though? I mean, I guess maybe instead of asking how is it salvageable, I would ask you, is it salvageable with LeBron at his age, with Anthony Davis and all of the obvious injury concerns that surround him, Westbrook and his money? Is this salvageable?
Look, nobody can see into the future, but I don't think they're going to win another title in L.A. I don't think LeBron wins another one. Here's the single biggest factor, and we're ignoring it. LeBron James and Anthony Davis are having a hard time staying healthy, and that's not going to get better with time. It's only going to become more difficult. Look, it's great that LeBron James had this kind of year offensively, and he scored the basketball the way that he did, and he likes to think that that means he can still do it at that level. Yeah, for maybe 60 games. Anthony Davis gives you 50 games. And then are they ready on April 15th when the playoffs start to take you through a two-month run? I just don't think at this stage of their careers we can expect health, and that's the biggest factor.
I get that. From Anthony Davis, I totally agree. If I were to say to you that the problem with LeBron James is that they just needed too much from him, I was on the court, so were you, that night at L.A. when he scored 56 points. And then he had to sit out for a couple of days because you can't expect a guy at his age in this stage to do that. If they surround him with better pieces, I don't feel like LeBron's health is going to be the biggest concern.
If he can go back to a situation where he's playing predominantly point guard and he's not a guy that's got to go out there and get 30 every night. For them just to be in the game, maybe. But where are they going to add those pieces when you look at the top of the roster and the money committed to those three players?
Zach, put a ribbon on it for me.
It's going to be tough, like Legs said, but I'm not betting against LeBron and AD making another run at it. But another thing that we're overlooking, the Clippers are coming back fully loaded next year. And the Nuggets are coming back fully loaded next year. It sounds dramatic for Legs to say he'll never win a title again in LA. I do think that is the likeliest outcome, given that the West is not getting any easier.
So that leaves one of two possibilities. Either LeBron is done winning championships, or he winds up finishing his career someplace else. We'll keep an eye on that. Meanwhile, we'll talk more about the playoffs a little later in this hour. We should also remind you, the NFL draft is just 16 days away, and questions still loom about how the Packers are going to go about replacing their star wide receiver, Devontae Adams. They have the 22nd and 28th picks in this year's draft, in the first round, and then obviously other picks as well. So do they decide to do something they haven't done in a long time, and that is take a wide receiver in the first round, or maybe more than one? Rob Domofsky covers the Packers for us oh so well, and he joins us live here this morning on Get Up. What do we know about the Packers thinking here, 2 weeks away from the draft, Rob?
Greeny, you mentioned all the picks they have. They have so much flexibility with four picks in the top 60. And if you look at general manager Brian Gutekunst's history in the draft, he's willing to trade up. Three times in his four drafts, he's traded up in the first round. So it's not out of the question that they could move up to get one of those receivers that might fall in the top 10 or so. It's also not out of the question that they could draft multiple receivers this year. I want to give you a real quick history lesson with the Packers. Gutekunst was a scout in 1999 when his boss at that time, Ron Wolf, used his first three picks on cornerbacks, defensive backs. That was a direct result of Randy Moss having just come into the division with the Vikings in 98. Then fast forward to 2012. The Packers had just been coming off a season in which they were dead last on defense. They ranked 32nd. Ted Thompson, the general manager at that time, used his first six picks on defensive players. Now, recently we asked Gutekunst, is it possible that you could come away with multiple receivers to offset the loss of Devontae Adams and Marquez Valdez-Scantling? And he said, quote, we have never shied away from taking multiple players at the same position. But one thing you mentioned, Greeny, they have shied away from, and that's taking receivers in the first round. It would seem likely that they would break the streak of not having done so since 2002.
We will see that in 2 weeks, and I would agree with that thinking. Let me ask you this. What do we know about the input that Rodgers will have in this? What role does he play in this decision-making?
Well, we know he's never had a role before, right? That's what led to all the trouble in the past, and it came to a head last offseason. But here's the thing that Gutekunst could do. He could say to Aaron, hey, here's the five or six or seven receivers that we are considering. Which one do you like? Watch some film on that. Now, we don't know if he will indeed do that. But that is a possibility. The danger there, though, is if Rodgers said, hey, look, I like Chris Olave from Ohio State, and then the Packers end up taking Jahan Dotson from Penn State, then you have a problem. The other thing to consider is Rodgers even around, or is he off in some sequester doing some sort of a cleanse, and they can't even reach him because they know he's probably not going to be here for the offseason program.
Okay, Rob, stay with us. I want to bring the rest of the crew back in here because it's an interesting thought. And so, let me ask you this. I won't put Cam on the spot immediately. Yeah. Bart, right now, if you're the Packers, and I'm telling you, you got the 28 and the 22 pick mm-hmm. here, the two first-round picks, would you trade them both for DK Metcalf? Which are they better off with DK Metcalf or with two rookies?
It's not even a question. It's DK Metcalf because, listen, they won't feel the effects of the loss of Davante Adams until they play against better talent, right? You know, of course they're going to win their division. Their division is powder puff. It's marshmallows, right? But when you think about it right now, they're not better than the Rams. They're not better than Tampa. And they're not better than San Francisco as long as Jimmy G is still on that roster. Mm. So then I think they fall into that second tier with Dallas, Arizona, your Saints, right, as far as that team that looks to maybe supplant or make – look to maybe dethrone one of those guys that's in that top tier. So DK Metcalf is instant gratification, it's instant input. Listen, you don't know what these guys are going to be coming out their first year. Right now, Aaron Rodgers is put himself in a position where he has to win because his relationship with Davante Adams wasn't as strong as we thought it was. He wasn't able to keep the franchise receiver in-house because of his diva-like tendencies.
What do you think of that, Teddy? If I'm giving you the option. You talked earlier today about Rodgers maybe spreading the ball around a little bit. Oh, I see the look on your face. Go ahead, Teddy. Go.
I just don't know how it's done. I mean, with what you're paying Aaron Rodgers and not only getting DK Metcalf for the two picks, but what you're going to have to pay him. That's the one thing you have to consider with that. I mean, then all your money's on the offensive side of the ball. And what about, we do play defense too and paying some of the guys over there. So you give Aaron Rodgers a couple young players that he can develop. You're going to struggle in September. Aaron may tongue lash these guys till they get out and hopefully they're mentally tough, but if you even trade up to get one specific one, and I hope Aaron Rodgers isn't off doing a cleanse somewhere and not involved in this process because he should be. He's the quarterback. He's talked about input. He's talked about how guys have left and come back and all this. Well, who do you want, Aaron? That's what they should do, and Aaron should put in the work too if there's a specific player that he sees that he wants. That input is valuable.
You are seeing some of the receivers that we're talking about on your screen there and some of that video. Jameson Williams, who's four on that list there from Alabama, would probably have been one, except he tore up his knee in the national championship game. How about it, as you sit here and listen to all this, Cam, what is your takeaway on the expectation here?
I mean, you can't replace Devontae even if you do go get, you know, DK. They're right. Not the same receiver.
Right. Right.
I mean, so at that point, go ahead, draft them. Also, don't take too many because, you know, black and gold may need one.
But the expectations is what? Super Bowl, right? They need to win a Super Bowl. They're not a better football team, Grinny, than they was last year.
Domofsky, I saw you sort of nodding your head along. Does the financial piece of this make the DK of it all basically off the table?
That's exactly right, Greeny. I mean, Teddy made the point was, yeah, it's great you could acquire DK Metcalf for a couple of first-round picks, but you're going to end up having to pay him, you know, $25 million a year, and you know, that didn't work with Davante Adams. Now, Adams wanted out, so there was a ton of layers to that onion, but it's going to be so hard to get DK Metcalf under the salary cap and still be able to do the other things that you want to do. It looks great on paper, but not the paper money part of it that they would have to pay.
I understand. So, I mean, look, he's been a Seahawk, but he'd be the bird in the hand in this case, as something of a known commodity versus these rookies, and you never know what you're getting. Domofsky, outstanding as always. Thank you. Let me take a quick break here. When we continue, I'm going to ask Cam Jordan to play a little game with us. I will ask him about some NFL quarterbacks, and he's going to tell us the very first thing that comes to his mind. We have that on the way next. Plus, the Nets' road to the playoffs begins tonight against Cleveland. There's no chance they lose this, is there? We'll answer that question as we continue. You're watching Get Up on ESPN. right, we are back on Get Up. And so, Cam, we are officially welcoming you to the program by asking you to tell us the first thing that comes to your mind when I mention a different quarterback. Let's start with Patrick Mahomes. What's the first thing that jumps to your mind?
Gunslinger. I mean, you know, he's side passes, the no-look passes, down the field, he's throwing bombs. And he probably went to Texas A&M, so, you know, gunslinger.
And obviously he has proved it to be spectacular throughout. The next one I have is Dak Prescott of the Cowboys, and we will see you going off on him during your times against him. What comes to mind with him?
Man, sturdier than what you expect. I mean, I'm looking at him like he's not Ben Roethlisberger, you know. He's not Lamar Jackson in terms of just, you know, his stature. Way stronger than what you think he was in terms of resisting a sack.
Is that Kofa?
Physicality.
Is that Kofa? He's thick?
I will never say that out loud, but I would say that he's sturdier than I thought.
How about Russell Wilson? What comes to mind when you think of him?
Man, overachiever. I mean, there's been so many years that you've, like, look at the off the line, we're going to feast, and then you see Russell Wilson take off, you know, the semi-spins, the half-spins, the reverse spins, the way he's able to elongate these plays and help his receivers become stars. I mean, I'm just saying he had to be an overachiever.
It's fascinating to me as I bring everyone in on that thought that I think some people view him that way. And I think that Russell and others, some other people, view him as a legitimate NFL superstar, like sort of an immortal quarterback. And therein lies the dichotomy of him and the opportunity he gets in this second act in Denver. What is your sense of the way the league is perceiving him and this move?
Yeah, well, it's funny because being high in that pantheon of quarterbacks is important to Russell Wilson. He wants to be the best to ever do it. Sometimes he's left out of that conversation. Yeah. You hear Mahomes and Rodgers, you don't always hear Wilson. I think that eats at him a little bit. But talking to some teams around the league, they believe that he's got a little something to prove. Maybe he didn't have the best year and a half on the field in Seattle. They'd like to see him in the new offense with Nathaniel Hackett, master it, get the ball out a little more quickly. But I'm told he's had his hands all over this new offense. This will be tailored around him and his skill set in a huge way.
It's an interesting way of looking at it, Teddy Bruschi. I mean, as one who has rings on multiple fingers yourself, does Russell Wilson have something to prove?
He does. Mahomes, Rodgers, Brady. Wilson right now doesn't belong in that conversation. He just doesn't. There's elite quarterbacks, but then there's an upper echelon of quarterbacks that everyone is trying to get to. And those three that I mentioned, of course, are up there. Russell Wilson is someone I know has won a Super Bowl, lost a Super Bowl, but you're always waiting for him, almost hoping for him to, like, dude, go win your MVP, all right? Go do things that, you know, throughout the course of an entire season, like, bam, go light it up. And that's just something that along with that comes wins, and the combination of the statistical numbers along with the wins and then putting teams on your back, that type of thing consistently we are seeing Mahomes, Rodgers, and Brady do, and that's where Russell isn't yet. But this is his chance, absolutely, switching teams, new offense, new players to get on the same page with. If he does this, that's when you can start talking to him about that. If the wins also correlate and they make noise in the playoffs.
That's a really interesting thought. You know, Cam, I'll bounce off you. Our colleague Dominic Foxworth made this point once on the show, and I think it was right. I think Russell Wilson sort of saw himself at one point as, well, Brady and Rodgers are the faces of the league. And then when their time comes to an end, it'll be me. And what happened was, A, they never went away, and B, he got surpassed. Here came Patrick Mahomes. Here came Lamar Jackson. Here comes Joe Burrow. And I think there's an element of, how about me in all of this here about Russell Wilson? Maybe this is his chance for it to be his time.
You can't not bring it up. I'd say Matt Stafford as well. I mean,
fair enough.
A guy who said that, you know, could never win a playoff game, and can make all the throws.
But Stafford wasn't – I don't think he was a guy who – I don't know what he fancied himself. I don't think we were thinking, well, is he going to replace Tom Brady as the best quarterback in the National Football League, as the face of the NFL? I think Russell did see himself that way.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, as you should. I mean, if you're the face of a franchise, you want to be the face of the league as well. I mean, for what he's been able to do, I mean, sure, he was granted Legion of Boom, but even after Legion of Boom, he carried the team for a number of years.
Is this his chance to do it, Bart, is what I'm asking.
I think so. Listen, he gets lost in the conversation. And I know a thing or two about defense, and I played against Russell Wilson. He's one of the better quarterbacks that I've ever played with, his ability to read coverages and adapt. Listen, we've never said, you know, oh, look at the Seattle Seahawks. They're loaded on offense. We've never said any time that he had the best teams, right? You talk about Matthew Stafford. He went to arguably a loaded roster that was Super Bowl ready. So now this gets gives him his opportunity. And he's been in the West Coast. And sometimes we have a West Coast bias because we don't see a lot of their games because they're regular games. They play later in the day and people don't really see it. I believe that Russell Wilson is one of the better quarterbacks. And I think if he's able to win another title, I think this puts him right there with Drew Brees. And I know that's saying a lot, but we can say that Russell Wilson in his 10 years has only had one losing season. And we at no point have we ever said, look at this stacked team. And they've been the Legion with no boom for a long time now. Ever since Earl Thomas and Richard Sherman left 3 seasons ago, he's carried this football team. They've always been respectable. They've been like the West Coast version of the Pittsburgh Steelers. You know that they're always going to be a tough out. They're always game, and they're always live for the playoffs.
I think everyone agrees with what you're saying. I think that the point, though, that Teddy made was – there's levels to this.
It is.
And he needs something else if he's going to be – if you're going to start talking about Rodgers and Brady and then including Russell Wilson's name in it, I don't think anyone does that now, right?
But the problem is because he doesn't get the primetime games like an organization like the Green Bay Packers get to be able to show everybody
those guys have been MVPs of the league. Those guys have done things he hasn't done. That's the point.
That's
this is his chance to do them. Right, Teddy? I mean, this is his chance. He needs to do it. He can. Now can
he get
now
the
really.
He'd get the prime time, he'd get the prime time games if he was doing it more consistently, like the MVP talk, where how it's like let Russ cook, boom, he's on fire, and then it fizzles, boom, he can't carry. That's what the thing. That's the difference between the quarterbacks that I mentioned, and then you know even Russell Wilson, and you know these quarterbacks, Mahomes, Brady, Rodgers, they will carry, and they no matter what, if the defense isn't playing well, if the run game isn't there. Boom, there's still success on a consistent basis.
Teddy,
that's what Russ has to show there.
But you talk about Kansas City. They got all-star teams, right? They got greatest of all time tight end receivers, the best offensive line, Pro Bowlers. Russell Wilson has never had that. They failed to protect him. They haven't drafted well in Seattle for a long time.
That's for sure. But let me just sort of finish this with a question. If Aaron Rodgers had gone to Denver, how differently would we be talking about them right now than we are with Russell Wilson?
Well, they would be the favorite.
And now we're talking about if they make the playoffs, it's a success. That's the point, is Aaron Rodgers, we just perceive him differently, and Russell wants to be perceived that way. We'll see if he's able to do it. Let me leave it there for the moment. We'll talk about another great young quarterback as we continue here in just a moment, and that's Lamar Jackson, because he is both the fastest and the slowest moving player at his position in the league. But we'll explain why both of those may wind up working in his favor. And it's time for Sneaky Hembo, and Zach Lowe is going up against him today. Here's the question. Which active player has the highest career scoring average in the playoffs? You need to have played a minimum of 10 games to qualify. Who leads the league in scoring average in the playoffs? That's the question. The answer's next. It's Get Up on ESPN.
Delicious, meat nutritious, and the snack that packs a real protein punch. Wonderful pistachios, one of the highest protein nuts out there. Each 1 ounce serving has 6 grams of protein, giving you over 10% of your daily value. Wonderful pistachios also come in a variety of flavors and sizes, perfect for enjoying with family and friends or taking them with you on the go. And you're on the go a lot, taking the kids to school, hopping from meeting to meeting, shopping for groceries. Well, the good news is, not only are wonderful pistachios a complete protein, providing all 9 essential amino acids, they're also great for all your adventures. So whether you're a pistachio purist who loves cracking open every nut, or you prefer the convenience of no-shells pistachios, Wonderful Pistachios has got you covered. Grab Wonderful Pistachios and elevate your snacking game today. Visit WonderfulPistachios.com to learn more.
We are back on Get Up, and with the NBA play-in beginning tonight, Zach Lowe, here we go from Hembo. Which active player that's played at least 10 playoff games has the highest career scoring average in the postseason?
So Sneaky Hembo tried to get sneaky and put that minimum 10 games played down there in little font, hoping I would miss it and guess Kevin Durant or James Harden or LeBron or somebody like that. Minimum 10 games played. You know who's played 13 playoff games and seems to score 40 every single night? Luka Doncic. I'm going Luka Doncic.
That is correct. That is extremely well played. He has played exactly 13 playoff games. His scoring average is 33.5 points. Kevin Durant is next, followed by Donovan Mitchell. So that's well done. So the playoffs don't start tonight. The play-in tournament does. We've got two games tonight and then two tomorrow. The tomorrow games will be on ESPN. Tonight's games, the Nets in Brooklyn against the 8th-seeded Cleveland Cavaliers. Winner of this one goes into the playoffs as the 7th seed and will play against the Celtics. Brooklyn is an 8.5-point favorite over Cleveland at Caesars Sportsbook. And let me bring Legler in. Legler, do the Nets win tonight?
Yes, they win tonight. The only way they don't win tonight is if we start off the segment covering the game tomorrow by saying, wow, did you see Darius Garland last night? If Darius Garland has one of those nights, and he's capable, I mean, he's that talented. If he outplays Kyrie Irving substantially, which he did earlier this year in a game, they've got a shot, but I don't expect it. Brooklyn's going to win the game. They'll get the 7. They will play the Celtics, and then the Cavs are going to be in a dogfight against whoever wins that other game. That is going to be a toss-up game against the winner of the other game.
To be clear, Atlanta-Charlotte is tomorrow night. That's the 9-10 game. The winner of that game will play at the loser of tonight's game on Friday night for the right to play against the 1 seed in Miami. Quickly on the Nets here, because I want to get to a few other things. But Zach Lowe, there's Woj is reporting that they may get 10 to 15 minutes per game out of Ben Simmons at some point in the first round of the playoffs, assuming they get there. He will not play tonight. How dangerous are the Nets in this postseason? How deep do they go?
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
They're dangerous, but if they win tonight, and I expect them to win tonight like Legs does, they're going to be underdogs in the first round against the Boston Celtics team, who basically became the 96 Bulls halfway through this season. If they somehow get by that with Ben Simmons playing at best a limited role, then they're probably looking at the Milwaukee Bucks, who won the freaking championship last year. So I just think if they win tonight, that path is just too hard for them to get to the conference finals. As great as their two stars are, as much fear as they inspire, you just gotta have everything clicking to beat two teams of that magnitude. And the Nets have not had everything clicking for 1 second this season.
And assuming that they do win tonight, it would put them, to the point that Zach just made, on the opposite side of the draw from where the Sixers sit. And for all of us who just want to see that series, for all the obvious drama it would bring, it would make it unlikely because, Legler, for those who are just joining us here and have not heard, I know you, and you make your home in Philly, so you know it really well. You have serious concerns about the Sixers.
Yeah, and they should, too, and everybody should. Everybody in that market is feeling it. There's a false sense of bravado I think they're trying to put forward right now that they're not that concerned about this series, but they absolutely should be. And it primarily revolves around this guy right here, James Harden. If James Harden does not play better than he's played the last 2 weeks, they are going to lose this series. He cannot just be okay. He cannot be inefficient. He cannot shoot the ball the way that he has shot it for the last 6 or 7 games. James Harden has to be much better, regardless of what Embiid does. And I'm very confident, based on what I've seen out of Embiid, you can book it. He's going to be like 30 and 13. Just go ahead and pencil it in, no matter how many games he plays in the postseason. It comes down to Harden. He's too important as a primary ball handler. If he has nights where he's making 3 and 4 field goals and he's got 4 and 5 turnovers, I don't care if he gets to 20 because he gets to the line. He has to play better than he has so far. And Toronto knows that. They're going to target him, and they're going to try to make him inefficient.
So, Zach, I mean, I've got two voices, and I respect them both enormously. I have Legler, who's scared to death of this for the Sixers, and we got Shaq on TV the other night saying the Sixers are going to sweep the Toronto Raptors in round one. How do you see this series, Zach?
If this is a sweep for the Sixers, I'm calling Shaq, even though I don't have his number, and asking him to take me to Vegas, because that is a bold, bold call. I am on team Legs on this one. I think this is a problematic matchup for Philly. Toronto loves playing Philly. Joel Embiid hates playing Toronto and all their long-arm guys who double and triple him and throw him all kinds of different looks. This is an enormous challenge for the Sixers. They will be favorites. I think that's fair when you have home court and the best player. But I agree with Legs. If James Harden can't get by people, if James Harden can't get by Precious Achiuwa, who's a really good defender, but he's a center, if James Harden can't get by that guy in crunch time, if James Harden can't shoot 50% from the floor in any of these games, Philly's in trouble. Toronto's really good, and if they're healthy, if they have OG Anunoby back and everyone's on board, they're deep enough to go eight deep of really good players and give Philly a lot of problems.
And I will remind everyone that Toronto's home court advantage in this series is even greater than usual because Matisse Thybulle, who is a very important piece of the Sixers puzzle, is not eligible to play. He is not fully vaccinated. He's not eligible to play the games in Toronto. So that would be games 3, 4, and if necessary, 6. All right, meanwhile, tomorrow night at 7 Eastern, we will kick off our coverage of the play-in. We get Trae Young and the Hawks hosting LaMelo Ball and the Hornets. A huge one tomorrow night in the Eastern Conference. That's the 9-10 game, means the loser is out. And then we got the Western 9-10 game between Greg Popovich's Spurs and the Pelicans. Again, the losers' seasons are over. We will start your night tomorrow evening, 6:30 Eastern, for NBA Countdown here on ESPN. All right, back to the NFL and a really interesting little situation. We got the Ravens quarterback Lamar Jackson. He will play this year on his fifth-year rookie option, which will pay him $23 million. He's then scheduled to be an unrestricted free agent. Yesterday on Rich Eisen's show, the head coach John Harbaugh explained why there hasn't yet been an extension for Lamar.
He's a unique guy, and it's, you know, people have been scratching their heads and trying to figure out Lamar probably for a long time, you know, ever since he was a kid. And he's got his way of going about doing things, but that's what you love about him. That's what I love about him. It's got to be a priority for both sides. We could do something, or we can wait because we know it's going to get done. He doesn't have. He doesn't think he has to think about his contract. He thinks, feels like he's got time to do it. And yeah, you could argue that one way or the other, but everybody gets to make that decision for themselves. That's a great thing. That's his choice, not somebody else's.
It's fascinating. Jeremy Fowler, my insider, those are literally the opposite words we usually hear from the team side. It's got to be a priority for both sides. That's usually the player saying that. Kyler Murray wanted his deal. Dak Prescott wanted his deal, etc. In this case, the team wants to do a contract, and it is Lamar Jackson who is playing it slow.
Green, Lamar Jackson is hitting the Ravens with his best open field move of his career. He's hitting with the juke.
Oh, I like that.
Might spin a little bit. He's killing him. I mean, because they want to do a deal. They're ready to do it, and they're just literally waiting on him. So they're hoping this heats up after
why,
the draft.
Why is he doing it? What is the strategy?
Well, think about it. How much has he earned just waiting over the last year? If he would have done something after 3 years and taken their first deal, he would have been at maybe, I don't know, $35, $38 million a year. Well, the price has gone up. We're looking at $45 million for these top quarterbacks per year.
Fully guaranteed.
So, right. So he's in a year-to-year situation right now because there's not a lot of optimism this gets done in the short term. He's going to go into the fifth year of a five-year rookie contract. It's unprecedented for an MVP on a first-round contract to go into that kind of situation.
Right. And again, they will have the option of franchising him beyond that. So it's not like he can just up and walk away. But it is highly unusual. Look, Lamar Jackson has done it his way from the beginning, and it has worked. He has bet on himself and won. He won the Heisman. He won the MVP. He's an NFL superstar. Yeah. But Bart Scott, as the former Raven in the group, how do you make of the way he's doing this?
Well, patience is a virtue. Unfortunately, we never see it in the NFL as everybody wants their smutty. And to quote Joey B, listen, yesterday's price is not today's price. And you talk about the patience, right? You talk about Lamar Jackson and how much money he's made. Listen, he understands that he's not going anywhere. Listen, he remembers a former Raven who won the MVP, not in the regular season. He won the MVP in the Super Bowl because he bet on himself and became the highest paid quarterback in the game. I think Lamar Jackson is trying to be the highest paid quarterback in the game, but to do that, he has to add something to his resume that has eluded him, and that is a Super Bowl, something to which he's promised. But he's been grossly underpaid his first 4 years, only four-year deal for $9 million. Now, understand, this year, the option is $23 million, but listen, Baltimore has been skating on Cheap Street for a long time.
Yeah.
Time to pay the piper.
Because he was the last pick in the first round, so I mean, they're all basically slotted in there. Teddy, let me just ask it to you this way, because the reason, to Bart's point, that generally football players want their money yesterday if they can get it is because of the risk of injury. How much of a concern with a player who plays the style that Lamar Jackson does, how concerned should one be about that? Teddy.
Yeah, that's the only logic I can look at here in terms of why the Ravens aren't giving him something that would make him happy and sign, because, I mean, this guy's the MVP like you're talking about, and he's 25 years old. But that's what Lamar has on his side, 25 years old. I mean, he has got a long career ahead of him. This is a player that I think the Ravens can absolutely win a championship with. I think they just see him as, man, I mean, I want to give him everything he wants, because this is the biggest headache in the National Football League in terms of game planning against in the NFL. Now, do they need other things for him to have that whole Lamar Jackson experience? Absolutely. I mean, I don't think they'll consistently win with Lamar in terms of using his arm on every single week. They're going to have him using his legs, using the 11-on-11 runs, those things like that, to succeed in a complementary fashion with that type of offense. You do need a spectacular defense to complement that. So maybe they're waiting because they know they eventually have to pay some guys on defense too.
And so, or maybe they should just call Cam Jordan. We will feast our eyes on this. Cam, 2018, when Lamar was a rookie, last time you've played against him, he wasn't even the regular starting quarterback at the time. But look at Cam Jordan chasing down.
Closing speed.
How about this, Cam? Take us through the play.
I mean, come on. You see what he's trying to do, and everybody knows where he's going. He's going to the sideline. You just got to beat him there, and not many can.
Almost no one can. How did you do it?
Look, wisdom. You know where he's going. You got to step on him. Like, you know he's pulling it. You know he's going to keep that. And you just got to meet him there. He slap a shoelace, pray to God, thank God after the play.
The following year, he was the MVP of the league. That was his rookie year. He was backing up Flacco or the beginning.
And then took the league by storm. You knew the storm was coming.
What do defensive players think about it? Tell me a defensive player's perspective of Lamar Jackson.
Don't give up the edge. If you can do anything, don't give up the edge. He hits the edge. I mean, he is overly dangerous. Once he gets out the pocket, that's when you get scared. Your idea is to keep him in the pocket if you can do it. I mean, once he escapes it, I mean, he's got world-class
speed. Of all the quarterbacks in the NFL, which one is he, the one that keeps you up at night the longest as you're preparing to play him that week? Is he the scariest one
in terms of as a D lineman? I'm like, look, where is he going to be? You know, because it's not about, like, if you can close the gap, because you can close that gap. But if he takes off, that's where you get nervous.
Well, I would ask you this. You know, much like Michael Vick, we haven't seen a quarterback affect the running game, because as a defensive end, when the ball is away in the boot actions, how does he keep your eyes and being able to hold you backside, potentially open up running lanes from the other side for the cutbacks?
Man, I mean, I played Michael Vick in Philadelphia. Yeah. That was legendary. You know, seeing somebody like that. But Lamar's a little faster. Maybe I caught him at Philly. I didn't catch him in Atlanta. I caught Philly Mike. You know, yeah. I saw Cam Newton. Cam Newton's, 6'6", 250 pounds, running a 4.5 at the time. Lamar's a little bit faster.
Yeah. Caught Michael Vick in Philly. Very few people caught him when he was in Atlanta. By the way, I want to show everybody this. Cam Jordan, I need you to explain this. But this is Meanwhile on Planet Earth. And you got the size 16 sneakers, and you're sitting there, you're doing the work, and you got the socks. What exactly happened here?
I mean, let's just be real. They're probably Jordans. But, one of the young guys out there came out there, flip-flops, cleats, and, just needed a pair of shoes. It was like, he was looking for them, and luckily we were the same size. You know, he said, need to run a 16. I was like, luckily I got you, my guy. Slid him shoes his way, and he was able to do what he needed to do. And, he's family of one of my teammates, which I learned later. You know, good old Caden Ellis for us.
You just gave a man your shoes, is what you're saying.
Are we not our brother's keepers? Are we not a big fraternity in terms of football?
Size 13.
I tell you what, size 16, I'm picking you in the kickball championship draft.
Boom, in them
baby bounce.
I'm going to break quickly on that thought. We have much more to do. It is an experience most of us will never have. What exactly is it like to sack an NFL quarterback, and who's the most fun to take down? All these guys will answer that question. Fowler and I will just dream as we continue. It's Get Up on ESPN.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use the code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use the code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
Oh, let's go, baby! Let's go, let's go! He's taken down. He's taken down Cam Jordan again. Four sacks on the game for Cam Jordan. Your best player takes over when you need it the most.
Are you not entertained? And let us begin.
He is one of the great sack artists in the NFL. By the way, if you thought you saw a lot of Matt Ryan in there, it's because he has sacked Matt Ryan a lot. We'll get to that. But we're going to go through your top five sacks of your career, starting at number five. And
the this first sack.
It's your first one.
Yeah, it's the first sack. I mean, that's probably the most important. To start getting to the game, you have to get a sack. It took me so, like, 16 games, and it was one off Cam Newton. I appreciated him. We ended up having a nice little, you know, I wouldn't say rivalry, but I was petty enough towards him. I don't think he cared.
Is that a horse collar?
I wouldn't say that. I would say that's a beautiful sack takedown. Look at that. That's a great sack.
Against any other quarterback, they call that.
No way. Not a chance.
All right, number four is Brady, and this one as a New England Patriot.
Right? I mean, if you're going against one of the greats, you know, I'll take him. I've sacked Tom a few times. I really liked it because it was like, you know, my second, third year in the league. It was the first time I think I got to double digits. And, you know, Tom Brady was a part of that. I appreciate him.
Does he get mad when you sack him?
No. Again, if you can hit him enough, he gets mad at the offensive lineman. He lives too much of a good life.
Well, number three is Brady again, but this time
you say
in Tampa.
Gotta love Tampa Brady. Tampa Bay?
Oh, yeah,
we love sacking him. I mean, again, he's one of the greatest to do it. And then, you know, for that was one of those games that we needed. And so you get a good old sack strip fumble off of him. I think the other game, it was like, you know, two sacks, three maybe. It's been a lot. And this last year was good to me.
Your defense has had a lot of success against him, particularly in the regular season. Let's go to number two, the Eagles, and you got Michael Vick.
Legendary. You grow up playing with Michael Vick, you know, throwing to, what was it, Algie Crumpler back when he was with Atlanta Falcons. So yeah. You grow up, you know, just idolizing him as a quarterback. And then, of course, was able to play him, which I guess makes me that old. I was able to play against Mike Vick and have my first three-sack game against him, so that's always going to be memorable for me.
Sacked Michael Vick three times in a game. Then finally, number one is going to be Matty Ice.
Man, you know what? I can only wish him well with the Indianapolis Colts because, I mean, he's leaving me, and I feel like I just got left behind because there's nobody I've sacked more than Matt Ryan in my career. I mean, 107 sacks, 23 of them between me and Matt. I couldn't tell you which one I like more. Maybe the four-sack game, maybe the three-and-a-half-sack game, maybe three-sack game. It's been a lot of sacks.
To be clear, you have sacked Matt Ryan 23 times. Does he say anything to you when you hit him?
I'm not really. I mean, I'd probably say more to him. I'm like, hey, thanks, appreciate you. Come on, bring it in. I'll be back for another hug later.
Let me bring the guys in here because we got a lot of people who have done some sacking. Now, obviously, Cam is one of the great sack artists of all time. But, Mark, we let each of you guys pick your favorite sack.
It's fine.
What was your most memorable sack of your career, Bartholomew?
Well, you know, I was an inside linebacker, so I got to rush sparingly. But I tell you what, it's nothing that ever had that sweet chin music like I got on Ben Roethlisberger, man. It's nothing like when somebody's burping the baby, you come around the edge and you say, he doesn't see you. Night, night, go to sleep, Craig. I've been down before. Get up, Craig. Get knocked out like your daddy used to.
Cam, give me a little breakdown on the film you see there.
I mean, as a defensive lineman, I hate to see it because the inside linebackers always get these freebie blitzes. I'm doing all this work and
I set this up. I was on the right side. The center put his head between his legs. I went to the other side.
Left side.
They slid it the wrong way.
I love the arguments. Teddy Bruschi, how about you? Your most memorable sack.
Yeah, sometimes you do get freebies, Cam. That is correct, Ed, but we'll take them. I think it's best when you sack old friends, especially former teammates. So I just love when we used to get to Buffalo Bills because Drew Bledsoe was the quarterback there and then sacking him. And this could be sort of a freebie. That's a free run right there, but I get the ball, and you get the ball. That's a sack. That's a tackle. That's a forced fumble. So look at the block right there, too. And we scored on this one. Richard Seymour going to the Hall of Fame, of course. Boom, taking about 60 yards, strip sack. That's the ones that you love, especially when it's your friend
cycle,
like that, because I'm texting right after this show and brag.
What is the cycle there?
Well, it's talking about the cycle. He got the fumble, he knocked it out, and he got the touchdown. You know what I'm saying?
And so, Teddy, that's an old teammate of yours. You guys played in the Super Bowl together in New England. Do you ever bring this up with Drew Bledsoe now?
All the time.
Oh, I'll be texting him right after the show and telling him it was on Get Up. Absolutely.
How about you, Cam? What is it like for all the millions of us, like Fowler and me, who will never know? That moment when you get home, when you've worked for all week long, when you get home and you knock a quarterback down, what's it feel like?
Man, it depends if that's the first one of the season. It's relief. You're like, okay, I'm back. I do know where home is. But when you get there, it's just like, all right, I've imposed my will. I was like, I'll see you shortly. Thank you for being here. Give me a couple more plays. I'll be right back.
Quarterbacks ever talk to you, Bart? Did they ever say anything when you hit them?
Phillip Rivers, he always had something to say. You know, but he was a guy that you can chirp with back and forth. But, you know, really, like, you want to make sure that you let them know who blew the assignment. On mine, Willie Parker blew the assignment. He went the wrong way. And this was back in the day when you used to have jacked up. So everybody back in the day was trying to make sure that they was on jacked up. They hit somebody with that sweet chin music.
Is that Phillip Rivers yelling at Mike Tomlin?
Yeah, he talks to everybody. Like, he didn't do shut up.
Teddy, well, any quarterback ever talk trash or anything like that at you?
Favre was a trash talker. Rivers, of course, was a trash talker. But here's what's so great in terms of sacking the quarterback. Ask a quarterback what goes into the passing game and then time them in terms of how long his answer is. Those answers can go like 5, 6, 7 minutes because they have to explain all these intricacies. They'll talk about poetry. They'll talk about artistry and all that stuff. And when you sack them, it's all over with. None of it mattered. None of the planning mattered. And you just sense and feel the frustration from the coaches all the way to the quarterback.
This is the good stuff, right, Fowler?
Oh, yeah. The only sacks we know is we sacked a good sushi dinner, I'm sure, the last couple nights. So that's about it.
For sure. Awesome. We got so much more to come. And then top of the hour, LeBron and the Lakers. They need a lot. A new coach, some new players, a new direction. Molly, Stephen A., Tim Legler, and Keyshawn talking that and more. It's First Take, top of the hour here on ESPN.
NBA fans, listen up. You've got to try Pick 6, the newest fantasy app from DraftKings, an official partner of the NBA. Getting started is simple. Select if a player will have more or less of a stat. For example, will a player have more than one rebound, or will a player have less than 3.5 assists? Pick your favorite players and compete for huge cash prizes. Download the new DraftKings Pick 6 app now using code Parlay and take on the competition with your best NBA player picks. Only on DraftKings Pick 6 with code Parlay. The crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 18 plus in most eligible states. Age varies by jurisdiction. Eligibility restrictions apply. Pick 6 not available in all states, including but not limited to Connecticut and New York. For up-to-date lists of states, visit dkng.co/pick6states. Void where prohibited. See terms at pick6.draftkings.com/promos.
In the seconds we have left, Cam, who's the one quarterback you've never sacked you would most like to?
I mean, I have to say Peyton Manning. I just, for some reason, whatever that reason is, right? Just never sacked him. I'm still mad about it. And then, of course, Drew. I may have hit him one time in practice, and he got mad at me, and that was, like, my bad. And I was like, but I've always wanted to light Drew up.
There you go. Peyton Manning. He has been sacked, but not often. You know who sacked him a lot? Teddy Bruschi. Teddy, 5 seconds. What was it like to sack Peyton Manning?
I love to hear him complain, and that's what you'll hear after you sack him.
That's a perfect way to finish.
Saturday,
thank
what are
you,
doing?
Jordan. Awesome today. See you tomorrow. First Take now.